morning, and may it please the court. My name is Stuart Lark, registration number 27369, and I represent appellant YMCA of the Rockies. With respect to the time allocated to appellants, we have agreed to split the first 10 or 12 minutes and then request to save time for rebuttal. Also, the counties have argued that this court does not have jurisdiction. As explained in our reply brief, we believe the court does have jurisdiction and that the statute cannot reasonably be read otherwise, or it would create an absurd result. I would be happy to address any comments the court may have on this, but otherwise I'll direct my comments to the merits. The religious property tax exemption law may not be intuitive, but it is very well established, both in case law and in statute. The Colorado Supreme Court has always applied a liberal rule of construction for religious exemptions. And the issue, and this is critical, the issue is not whether the activities are religious activities or religious worship, but rather whether the activities further religious purposes. In addition, the court has established a policy of receptiveness to religious exemptions, and that is an exception to the general rule that the presumption is against tax exemption. Applying these principles, the Supreme Court in Maurer versus Young Life exempted a camp that included many secular activities because it determined that those activities furthered Young Life's religious mission.
Counsel, can I ask you, the microphone on the right, I think if you can pull that a little bit closer to you. Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're better. Good. The Maurer Court also noted that a broad religious exemption supported constitutional principles of religious deference and neutrality. Based on these principles, the General Assembly has also codified a broad religious exemption, and it has provided detailed findings that government officials cannot determine whether activities constitute religious worship, and that many activities of religious organizations further their religious purposes. The statute also provides specific steps to establish a religious exemption. First, a religious organization must declare its religious mission and purposes and the uses of the property that are in furtherance of such purposes. The statute also provides that such declaration shall be presumptive as to the religious purposes for which such property is used. And the presumption can only be challenged if the religious beliefs are not sincerely held, if there is corporate profit or private gain, or if the property is not actually used for the stated purposes. In this case, the facts establish beyond dispute the YMCA's religious mission and purposes are sincerely held. And the board did not question that YMCA is a religious organization. And indeed, the undisputed exemption for the chapels on the properties confirms this status.
Counsel, excuse me. In the Maurer case, there's a phrasing that says that the board must examine the use to which the property is put and not the character of the owner. And so here we have the character of the owner, I think is undisputed that the YMCA is essentially a Christian organization. And it would seem to be that in Maurer it says that the board is not to examine that, but rather must examine the use to which the property is put. Could you address that?
Sure, thank you. The Maurer Court also noted that the character of the owner may be indicative or reflective of the use, of the nature of the use to which the property is put. And so it was a relevant, though not determinative, consideration. And certainly it is correct to examine the use, but the examination of use must be with respect to whether it furthers religious purposes, not whether the particular use is somehow religious inherently in and of itself.
And how does the board make that determination of whether there is a furtherance of that purpose?
Well, it has to look at what the bona fide representations are of YMCA. In this case, YMCA has articulated that it uses the properties to demonstrate and promote Christian principles. It creates a Christian environment. And the first thing the board can look at, and the property tax administrator, is whether the actual use of the property is as represented by the YMCA. In other words, are they doing what they said they were doing? And that's the second way they can look at it is simply, is it bona fide? Is it reasonable? And in this case, providing a religious camp is a time-honored way of furthering a religious purpose, and there's no question about the bona fides of it.
I understand that you're also relying on the charitable exemption, even though you haven't gone to that portion. But if we conclude that the board erred in denying the charitable exemption, do we even need to reach the issue on the religious exemption?
Well, the two exemptions do operate independently, so either one of them would be sufficient to establish an exemption. The board, in its order, appears to have ignored entirely the statutory and case law principles that we've just articulated. The board ignored the presumption in favor of religious exemptions and instead applied an opposite presumption against exemption. And the board effectively asked not whether YMCA uses its properties to further religious purposes, but whether it does so in a sufficiently religious manner. The facts cited by the board do not defeat the presumption that YMCA uses the property to further its mission. To the contrary, they are part of that mission, being open to the public, reaching out to the public, expressing its Christian principles even to those guests who don't share those purposes. By relying on these criteria, the board effectively held that YMCA's operation is too secular, a standard which violates both Maurer and the statute. In addition, the board's distinction between Young Life and YMCA is nothing more than religious favoritism. The board seems to think that Young Life's approach of more, quote, religious programming run by YMCA, Young Life itself, is somehow a better way to accomplish a religious mission or a more religious way than how YMCA does it. And again, this is just reflective that the board's criteria that they look at is effectively following the Maurer dissent and asking whether a property is too secular. And the Maurer dissent, of course, is not the law.
Mr. Larker, I wanted to go back to your argument about the applicable presumption. The property administrator, the PTA, has admitted or stated in its brief, conceded basically, that the burden of establishing the religious exemption remains on the YMCA to establish clearly the right to exemption. Do you agree with that statement?
Well, it's it might be worded a little more broadly than what the Maurer Court said, because the Maurer Court, in distinguishing the presumption for religious organizations, said that it's not the typical presumption, and that where the burden is to claim exemption is clearly the right. You have to establish clearly the right to such relief. I think there is a burden to put forward the facts in a bona fide way that establish that the organization has bona fide religious beliefs and it actually uses the property in furtherance of its religious mission. I would like to thank you for your time and turn over to my other co-counsel.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Robert Dodd. I'm a senior assistant attorney general with the Colorado Attorney General's Office, and I represent, in this case, the Colorado Property Tax Administrator. We have a little bit different interest, probably, than the Y, in the respect that rather than being here on behalf of a particular property or interest, the Property Tax Administrator's interest is in ensuring a proper application and the consistent application of the law. And so we speak to you today with that in mind. And I'd like to begin.
Does the board have that same mission?
Your Honor, the board does, when it appears as a board in review of the decision, certainly have the obligation to follow the law. We would contend, however, that that is not there, particularly with regard to property tax. They are not charged with administration of the law, as is the property tax administrator, who's a constitutional officer charged with setting guidelines and is the officer who is established to act on property tax exemptions as a first matter. So the Board of Assessment Appeals, being primarily a Board of Appraisers, has the responsibility for review. However, we believe the property tax administrator's expertise in this case is more directly concerning exemptions. And we do have concerns about the application of law by the Board of Assessment Appeals. I'd like to begin just by addressing a question that Your Honor asked about the use to which the property is put and what is the role. The statute does speak to that in that with regard to religious exemptions, one of the criteria under which a religious mission can be challenged is that the property is not actually being put to the use as stated or as described by the applicant. That's under 117. So in this case, I want to emphasize, the counties have not argued, in fact, any of the three grounds under statute by which it is permissible to challenge the religious exemption. Once they state their religious mission and purposes under section 39.2.117, the administrator or any party can challenge that it's not a religious belief sincerely held, number one. Number two, that it's not actually put to the uses as stated. Or number three, that in fact, the property is used for private gain or corporate profit. So those are the grounds with grounds which the legislature has stated that we may challenge the declaration of religious mission and purpose. And if that mission and purpose are accepted as religious belief sincerely held, then the activities which may be conducted in furtherance of that purpose are very broad. And the legislature has specifically directed the administrator to take a very hands-off approach in terms of deciding what activities might be religious or not. Because, as they say, religious worship may mean different things to different people. And this is intended to keep the government from taking becoming unduly entangled in determining what constitute religious worship. And that, for that purpose, we protect our religious freedom of everyone. And for that reason, the BAA's order, the Board of Assessment Appeals order in this case, has serious implications for our constitutional liberties when considered in that light, because they would actually move us in the direction of having government bureaucrats determine what religious worship should look like and what it should be.
Council, the board apparently concluded or is of the belief that the YMCA's proof was insufficient. Does your client take a position on what type of proof would have been sufficient, and when you get to that point of entanglement, which would be improper?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, our position is that whatever we might personally or individually think that religious worship should look like, that because of the statutory criteria that has been laid out by the legislature, essentially we are limited to making the determination, is this a religious belief sincerely held? And then the question becomes not whether the activities in furtherance of that religious mission look sufficiently religious to us, but whether or not they are conducted in furtherance of that legitimate, sincerely held religious belief. And thereby, the questions that are laid out that have to be determined are fairly narrow. It's admitted that there's by design not to be a great review by government in determining how religious certain activities are. I hope that is appropriately answered your question, Your Honor. I see I have a minute and a half left, which, if possible, I'll reserve for rebuttal.
Of course.
Thank you.
Appley.
Good morning. My name is Anthony J. DeCola. I'm the Grand County Attorney. I represent the people of Grand County. If you listen to the Attorney General's argument, we don't need you. If we listen to the Attorney General's argument, we don't need you. Or we don't need the BAA. Because their position is, if the YMCA applies for an exemption and says we're a religious organization and we're using the property for religious purposes, done deal. That's it. That's not the law.
Is that what he said, counsel, or did he say that there are specific provisions under which you can reverse his decision if there's not evidence to support his decision?
Well, I think the law is that the property needs to be used for religious purposes. It's a use question. And this is not. This
how,
is.
How do you determine that? What is that test for whether it's sufficiently religious or it does or doesn't meet?
It's a factual question. It's a question of fact.
Counsel, the BAA's opinion talks about the YMCA's purposes were not patently Christian purposes, and its activities were not overtly Christian activities. What gives the BAA, or this court for that matter, the ability to determine what's a patent Christian activity?
First of all, this is the West Brandt case. This is not the Maurer versus Young Life case. But the bottom line is, when you go to the history of this exemption has to do with religious worship. That's what this is all about. The Maurer case said that the history of the religious exemption has to do with religious worship and reflection. This is a hotel. This is a resort. Okay? This has nothing to do with religious worship and reflection. Nothing at all.
Counsel, how many commercial enterprises, other lodging establishments in your county have a pay on or ability to pay type of situation? It's my understanding that the record supports that if somebody cannot afford some of the services provided, you know, if they prove they have an inability to pay, they may be admitted for free or for a lower cost. So how many other commercial establishments have that?
There's a lot of evidence in the record that various hotels, such as the Inn at Silver Creek, which is right down the street, gives away more than the YMCA does. The Inn at Silver Creek, right down the street, in fact, in the briefs, we compare the rates. The rates at the Inn at Silver Creek, right down the street, are the same rates as the YMCA. And the Inn at Silver Creek, right down the street, provides free stays for battered women, the same sort of thing. The whole issue with regard to the YMCA, and they didn't mention the establishment clause at all, but all those folks from Fort Collins and Larimer County who testified about what an unfair advantage it would be, that's what the establishment clause is about. The YMCA would get an unfair advantage over all of the people it competes with. If you look at the testimony in the record from the Chamber of Commerce, from the Central Reservations people, this is a lodge, a resort, and it's just like...
As I understand your argument, this is a question of unfair competition, but as I read the statute, 39.3.106, the General Assembly has made a very explicit statement that religious worship has different meanings to different religious organizations, and that many activities of religious organizations are in the furtherance of their religious purposes, and that those activities are integral to what they do, and therefore that the activities of religious organizations that are in furtherance of their purposes, of their religious purposes, constitute religious worship.
But the primary purpose of the YMCA is to provide inexpensive lodgings to a variety of groups to use the YMCA for whatever purpose they choose.
For whatever purpose the lodging choose.
Yes.
But the legislature seems to be saying that it's a question of the YMCA's purpose, not the purpose of those who would go there.
Well, if you go all the way back to the purpose of the law, which is to provide a place of worship and reflection, that's not what happens here. We went through the list of the people who use the YMCA, the Trial Lawyers Association, the choruses, weddings. I mean,
So does this mean that if a person goes into a church, if enough people go into a church and their purpose is not to pray, then that church could be deprived of its religious purpose because the people who go there aren't there for a religious purpose?
The YMCA is not a church. The YMCA is a resort.
But that's not my question. My question is this. I mean, your thesis right now is that what we should look at is the people who go to this camp and what is their purpose. It seemed to me that the extension of that is that if we're going to look at the purpose of the people who go there, I suppose a group could wipe out a church's religious exemption just by going and sitting in the church for purposes other than worship.
Well, the purpose of the edifice of the church is for worship and reflection. The YMCA has its sign out on the highway, and it rents to anybody who can pay the fee. They might, it's like Are Holiday Inns, should the Holiday Inns be exempt because they have a Gideon's Bible in the drawer? And the YMCA is no different than that. The YMCA, the sentence I read is from the West Branch case. That's what the YMCA is. The YMCA is simply a lodging. It's simply a hotel.
Let me interrupt you again, because you keep coming back to that, and I'm not quite seeing how that relates to the law.
Well, I guess
as I understand the law, it is that if we have an organization whose primary purpose is religious, and it has properties that it is using for a religious purpose of the organization, that's to be viewed under the statute as a religious worship.
The statute talks about use. A church is used for religious purposes. A church is. A hotel is not.
Council, okay. Let's take an example of a church. Let's say it has church services for 5 or 6 hours on a Sunday. Like every day it has a soup kitchen, which anybody can come to of any faith. And by the way, most churches allow people of any faith to get their services. But it has a soup kitchen that operates every day. Anybody can come to receive free food, and there's no effort to proselytize or force them to worship or anything like that. And let's say they do that 7 days a week, 3 hours a day, with it takes 10 hours a day to prepare and everything. So that 70 hours a week is for the soup kitchen, maybe 6 hours a week is for religious purposes. Does that church lose its tax exemption?
No.
But the people who are going to the soup kitchen aren't worshiping. They may not be there for any religious purpose whatsoever. They're there simply for sustenance.
In this case, we've exempted the chapels. The chapels, we didn't object to the chapels. They actually have churches on the site. And we exempted the chapels. We didn't even object to those. I need to give Mr. Haas, let him come up. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is George Haas, Larimer County Attorney, registration number 897. In case it hasn't been clear, we divided up our arguments where Mr. DeCole was going to take the charitable exemption or the religious exemption, and my purpose is to take the charitable exemption and argue that. In looking at the charitable exemption, Your Honors, I think it's important. And matter of fact, looking at both exemptions, it's vitally important to understand and recognize that these YMCA properties are public accommodations. They are not churches per se. They don't claim to be a church. Their restaurants are open to the public. Their hotels are open to the public. Their advertising materials, as we mentioned in our briefs, are talk about hotels, talk about vacations, talk about the experience, the outdoor experience that their guests would have. The guests are called guests. They refer to themselves in their literature as a hotel. The problem with the...
Why is that determinative?
Well, I think it is in this way. The burden is on the... This is about property use. It's not about who the YMCA is. Who the YMCA is might be relevant to a 501c3 exemption, might be relevant to a sales tax exemption, might be relevant to a whole host of other religious or charitable type advantages. But when it gets down to ad valorem property taxes, we look at property primarily and first.
So you're looking at how the property is used by the people who perhaps are not members of the YMCA.
And how the YMCA itself uses it. Both. Okay. It's the owner and the guests.
Okay.
Are important. And
what would you say is the difference between purpose and use? What is if we were to look at the statute and we were to look at, you know, to what purpose does the YMCA put this property, or to what use does it put this property?
As an example, it's in the PTA's brief that roller skating and hosting the Wells Fargo business group is they assume that to be a religious purpose. We believe that the BAA is properly charged with determining the facts of that and whether or not that is in fact a religious use of the property. And it's not, we need to keep in mind one thing here, that the property tax administrator does not decide facts based upon disputed evidence. They take an application, and that application carries with it under section 392.117 certain presumptions and limits the PTA as to what it can inquire into. The BAA is not similarly constrained. BAA conducts a factual hearing and establishes the facts under which you have to operate also. And they decide, as a matter of fact, on both exemptions, that the property was not used for either religious or charity.
Not used by the YMCA.
Or the guests. And I think it's a mixed question. I don't think you can parse it that way. Like I said, you might be able to parse it that way if you're talking about a 501c3, because that's whether or not the YMCA would be exempt from paying federal income tax. When you look at property use, it's a mixed question. It's people who occupy the property as guests of their hotel, and it's the intent of the YMCA as to how they deal with their property. And this is a very good reason for this. Property tax, ad valorem property tax, is the primary way that some local governments, schools and counties in particular, finance almost all of their operations. That's through the property tax. To grant an exemption from that property tax is serious business. Now, under the charity exemption, as the law is abundantly clear, and it's in the AMFM case, the law is abundantly clear that there has to be a offsetting benefit. In other words, if you give up $1,000 in property tax, the property owner or the property user has to offer an equivalent amount in charity to offset that loss of revenue, in other words, lessen the burden of government. That is very clear, and it's throughout the AMFM case, which I think that case pretty much decides the charity part of this. And because properties are so unique, and each one is individually decided, I know the YMCA mentioned in their brief a couple times that this is the only YMCA that doesn't have an exemption or something along those lines. The BAA, they tried to present that evidence to the BAA, and the BAA rejected it out of hand. They would not hear it. The BAA knew that this property was the subject of the case, not what has happened in other properties, which leads into the standing jurisdictional argument. The BAA also knew that these properties are so unique, these two YMCA properties who operate like hotels and restaurants and resorts are so unique that they also decided these were not a matter of statewide interest because they are unique. And that fits into the standing jurisdictional argument that I'm not going to address any more than just that.
Council, if we conclude that both of these facilities are entitled to the religious exemption, do we even need to reach the charitable exemption issue?
I think, they're asking for both. And they do operate independently, but they are tied together under Section 393.106. And 393.101, the religious exemption is tied into the charitable exemption, but they're still independent ideas. I want to conclude with just this point about the charitable exemption. They have misrepresented the presumption that's allowed in the statutes. 101 talks about a presumption, but it talks about a presumption for listed uses: schools, churches, museums, homes for developmentally disabled, and those kinds of things. Here, YMCA does not fit any of those. It fits under 108, which requires it to prove that it is in itself a charity.
Mr. Carpenter, I might ask him a question.
Yeah.
Jurisdictional. I just wanted to see, what's your response to the YMCA's argument that under Section 393.101, the judiciary must make a final decision on whether property is used for charitable purposes. under your analysis of jurisdiction, there is no right of judicial review for the YMC under these circumstances.
Well, first of all, as a general principle, the legislature decides the jurisdiction of this court as well as the trial courts. And I think 10117 subsection 6, I believe, they have said that the judicial review only applies in this circumstance when the property, when the issue before the board is of statewide concern. In other words, and what I would interpret statewide concern to mean, properties, there are many properties similarly situated where this case would be precedent in those other cases.
Well, let me ask, that applies to respondents. And both of the counties say that the YMCA is a respondent, but that's not what it shows on the caption. It's not what it shows in the, that's not how they were treated in the court below, I mean, in the BAA. They were in an interview. And you cited no authority for saying they're a respondent. What's your basis for saying that YMCA is a respondent?
Well, they intervened on the side of being a respondent. When you intervene in a case, you got to be a party.
Did they say we want to intervene as a respondent?
No, but they were, the property tax administrator decided in favor of the YMCA. So when the YMCA intervened before the BAA, they had to be a respondent because they wouldn't be appealing to the BAA. They would not be the petitioner in that case. And I'm not claiming that statute is the best worded statute in the world, but it is clear. And if it's a mistake, the legislature needs to fix it. There's no ambiguity in that statute.
Thank you, Mr. Haas.
Thank you. I'll just direct a few closing comments to the charitable exemption part of our application. Nothing that the counties have raised distinguishes YMCA either from Young Life in a material sense or from CommunityWise. The record establishes that the CommunityWise in Colorado have charitable exemptions. They serve the same purposes that YMCA does as part of the national YMCA. And they do it in essentially the same way, with kinds of activities that further healthy spirit, mind, and body for all.
Mr. Mark, there's a distinction, it seems to me, between Moore and this case, or perhaps. Mm-hmm. And that is, in Moore, they said that the camping was used as a way of engaging youth. And then once the youth became engaged, then the Young Life people used that as a way of getting them to become Christians and pay attention to the gospel. YMCA doesn't do that second step. Is that a meaningful distinction?
It is a distinction. I would say it's not meaningful because those are just different ways of accomplishing religious missions. I mean, Young Life is a more directly evangelical organization. YMCA is not. But we see in our pluralistic religious society wide range of accomplishing different kinds of religious purposes from the more active to the more reflective. And YMCA just has a different approach to accomplishing its mission.
Mr. Lark, Mr. DiCola argued that essentially you're running a hotel and a restaurant. And if I can paraphrase his argument, it is that regardless of your intentions about that this will foster your religious purposes, YMCA's religious purposes, there's no manifestation of that. People come in off the highway, they eat food, they're not exposed to any religious material, their purposes are to eat, they leave, or they come into the lodgings and they sleep there and they leave, and all you're doing is providing a restaurant and a hotel. What makes this, how does this cross over into a religious purpose?
Well, it isn't the same as any other restaurant or hotel. I mean, there are superficial similarities, and I would point out that the Young Life Maurer case also involved one of the properties was a hotel with restaurant as well. And the fact is that the properties at YMCA do have distinctly religious content in terms of the YMCA's mission and the chapels and crosses that the record shows are scattered throughout the grounds. and then the way YMCA promotes its core values and other principles in the context of all the activities and the facilities that it offers is a means by which YMCA furthers its religious purposes.
If I can say that back to you, see if I understand. Essentially, what you've done is you've created a campground, if I can use that term, that everywhere manifests YMCA's commitment to Christianity, and that simply by people being there, then you are furthering your religious purpose of Christianity and spirituality.
I think that's fair, and YMCA has an opportunity to promote its Christian principles to guests when they are on the property.
To guests, and you do that, at least as to some guests, only quite passively, that there are signs there, there are crosses, there are Bibles.
Yep, and there's materials in the restaurants, there's materials on every table that reflect YMCA's Christian mission and various biblical teachings.
And is that in the record?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for the quality of your arguments. Thank you for coming to Aspen, making the trip here to argue the case here rather than in Denver. This case is now submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course. We are now in